Viking, committed to exploring the world in comfort. Journey through the heart of Europe on an elegant Viking longship with thoughtful service, cultural enrichment, and all-inclusive fares. Discover more at Viking.com.
The EU hits Meta with a record fine over data transfers to the US. Plus, debt talks are set to resume in Washington in a last-ditch effort to avoid a default. And Russia claims victory in the Ukrainian city of Bakhmut.
It's the first city of any size that Russia has been able to take since early July. So symbolically, it's very important.
It's Monday, May 22nd. I'm Luke Vargas with The Wall Street Journal, and here is the AM edition of What's News. The top headlines and business stories moving your world today. We are exclusively reporting that Facebook owner Meta has been fined $1.3 billion by European Union privacy regulators for sending user information to the United States, according to people familiar with the matter. And Wall Street Journal technology reporter Sam Schechner is here to fill in the details on this breaking news. Sam, tell us, what do we know about this fine coming through this morning?
Well, this is set to be the biggest fine under EU's privacy laws that's ever been issued. Previously, the record was from 2021, a nearly 750 million euro fine against Amazon, which is still tied up in appeals. And so this will far outstrip that as the record fine. And I think the reason that is because a board of EU privacy regulators in Brussels decided that this required an extraordinary fine to kind of as a show of force. And I think it shows that EU privacy regulators are trying to take a more strident and aggressive view of their enforcement powers.
Just to be clear, Sam, what is the precise issue with these data transfers?
The issue is that EU courts have said that Europeans don't have sufficient rights to challenge American surveillance when their data is stored in the US. And so, short of a change to US surveillance practices, certain companies, big communications and tech companies, subject to specific US surveillance laws, have to keep that information in the EU. Now, there is a pending agreement between the EU and US to reestablish the data flows, and effectively, today's decision puts pressure on Washington and Brussels to finalize that agreement. If they can finalize it before it goes into effect for Meta later this fall, then Meta can dodge a bullet and thousands of other companies will breathe a sigh of relief. But here we see what the consequences could be if that doesn't happen.
Yeah, about the other companies you were speaking of there, how significant of a decision is this for them?
Well, it's more of a precedent. In a way, it hasn't really been a surprise. I mean, we were actually first to report back in 2020 a draft decision ordering Meta to cut off these flows, and it's been caught up in litigation since then. So companies have known this is a threat, but they've sort of assumed that the EU and US would work it out, right? That there'd be a new data framework that would allow them to keep transferring the information. And now we're starting to see, okay, the rubber's hitting the road. There's a deadline by which this has to happen. Now, each individual company would have to face their own investigation from a privacy regulator in the EU to cut off their data flow. So it's not like somebody's coming out with a big pair of scissors sometime this fall, but it definitely would raise pressure on lawyers to either start encrypting their data, doing more to data to keep it safe when in the US, or just, I guess, calling the Biden administration and folks in Brussels and telling them to finalize this deal.
Finally, Sam, have we heard from Meta in response to this or from the US government? And if not, what might we expect their response to be?
Well, Meta has said that this is an issue affecting lots of companies. It's not specific to their behavior. They think that the US will reach a deal, but they've also said that if they don't, they might have to suspend their services in the EU. And the US has said that its surveillance practices are, in its view, proportionate, but it's also taken measures to help ease the concerns of Europeans. It's created a mechanism for Europeans to appeal their surveillance in the US. And so, from companies, the hope is that that will cinch the deal. It's been more than a year now that the EU and US have a draft deal to, quote unquote, solve this problem. I put that in quotes just because that deal is likely to be challenged and end up in EU courts again.
That was Wall Street Journal technology reporter Sam Schechner. President Biden and House Speaker Kevin McCarthy have agreed to meet this afternoon to resume talks to avoid a default on the U.S. debt. That news comes after talks between White House and House Republican negotiators largely ground to a halt over the weekend, with both sides blaming the other for failing to bridge differences over spending levels. Biden spoke to reporters on Sunday before agreeing to the latest talks, while McCarthy updated the press after speaking to the president.
I've done my part. We put forward a proposal to cut spending by more than $1 trillion. And on top of the nearly $3 trillion in deficit reduction that I previously proposed through the combination of spending cuts and new revenues. Now it's time for the other side to move from their extreme positions.
I think we can solve some of these problems if he understands what we're looking at. But I've been very clear to him from the very beginning. We have to spend less money than we spent last year. What I'm looking at are where our differences are and how could we solve those. And I felt that part was productive. But look, there's no agreement. We're still apart.
According to the U.S. Treasury Department, the U.S. might be unable to pay all of its bills as soon as June 1st, unless leaders in Washington can agree to lift the country's borrowing limit. And Senator Tim Scott of South Carolina is set to officially announce his bid to secure the 2024 Republican presidential nomination. Scott is the only Black Republican in the U.S. Senate and says that his ascent to Congress makes him the candidate most equipped to speak about the American dream. The number two Republican in the Senate, South Dakota Senator John Thune, is expected to endorse Scott, according to a Scott spokesman. Coming up, the nine-month battle for the Ukrainian city of Bakhmut effectively came to an end this weekend. We'll discuss where that leaves both sides after the break.
Technology can make the world better. At UST, we're building a future where people everywhere are empowered to live better lives.
It's transformation you can feel.
And you don't have to do it alone.
We believe in the power of technology to transform businesses and build a better world.
Russia is claiming victory in the eastern Ukrainian city of Bakhmut after months of relentless fighting led by the paramilitary group Wagner in Moscow's first significant conquest since last summer. I spoke to WSJ Chief Foreign Affairs Correspondent Yaroslav Trofimov to learn just how decisive a victory this is.
Symbolically, it's very important. So for Wagner, Bakhmut was the main effort. So while the Russian army is deployed everywhere else, this was the Wagner effort. And to get Bakhmut, Wagner had to recruit tens of thousands of prisoners in Russian prisons, most of whom were injured or killed in this assault. The losses and the investment of men and materiel is horrendous. And obviously, Ukraine also had very large casualties because Ukraine has poured resources to try to hold it. What Ukraine hasn't done, however, is to use in Bakhmut all these new brigades that it's been training for the planned offensive to retake other parts of Russian occupied territory. So that force of nine brigades trained by the US and allies and several other brigades trained locally are fresh, untapped, and ready for this offensive in coming weeks.
So how does the fall of Bakhmut then play into that upcoming offensive?
The fact that the Ukrainians have managed to expand the area into the south and north of Bakhmut and take the strategic heights means that Bakhmut's ability to serve as a springboard for further Russian offensive is limited. And now everybody's focus is shifting to where Ukraine will strike for this planned offensive, for which everything seems to be ready by now. Obviously, it's a very closely guarded secret because the Ukrainians don't want the Russians to know and prepare.
And perhaps key to any Ukrainian effort, Yaro, is the announcement from President Biden that U.S. allies can now provide Kyiv with F-16 fighter jets. How important of a capability is that for Ukraine?
There will not be any impact on this offensive because it will take probably half a year for these fighter jets to appear in Ukrainian skies. The Ukrainian pilots have yet to be trained in how to fly them. President Biden said that these jets would not have helped in the offensive. That's not entirely true because the missiles that these jets can fire are also quite helpful in the air-to-ground combat. And the Ukrainian jets don't have that ability. So obviously, already we are seeing the Ukrainians using their Soviet-made jets to fire British-supplied long-range missiles, the Storm Shadows. There is many more possibilities for this sort of use to support advancing troops with F-16s, and that's one of the reasons why the Ukrainians want them.
That was our Chief Foreign Affairs Correspondent, Yaroslav Trofimov. Turning to business now, Applied Materials says it will invest up to $4 billion in a new facility in California to conduct research on tools for making semiconductors. This adds to a wave of chip industry projects in the U.S. spurred on by federal government subsidies. The CEO of Applied Materials said that the company plans to build a facility no matter what government support it gets, but its size and pace hinge on how much Washington kicks in. Meanwhile, China is banning large Chinese firms from buying from Micron Technology, the biggest memory chip maker in the United States, saying its products pose a major national security risk. The ban comes less than 2 months after Beijing announced an investigation into imports from Micron. The move seemed a political gesture aimed at hitting back at Washington's decision last year to ban sales of advanced chip-making technology to China. WSJ Markets reporter Caitlin McCabe has more on what this tells us about the state of U.S.-China relations.
Things between the two countries have really deteriorated since the spy balloon incident from earlier this year. And President Biden has said, including even this weekend, that the U.S. wants more open lines of communication with China. I think for China's part, they've been looking for a way to retaliate against intensified U.S. sanctions against Chinese companies. But Chinese officials have also been wary of punching too hard to further limit Chinese companies' access to advanced Western technology. One lawyer that the journal spoke with said that other domestic customers in China could see this as a political signal to stop buying manufactured products from America. So it's definitely possible that we could see this spread beyond Micron, but I think we'll just have to wait and see for now.
The share of immigrants in the U.S. labor force has risen to a new high, according to the Labor Department, with foreign-born workers now making up 18.1% of the overall workforce. Sluggish U.S. population growth and an acceleration of baby boomer retirements during the pandemic helped to fuel that trend, creating labor shortages in many industries and greater job opportunities for immigrant workers. Last year alone, the number of immigrants in the workforce rose by 1.8 million people, or 6.3%. And low-cost carrier Ryanair says it swung to a net profit for the current fiscal year, beating analysts' forecasts on the wings of a 74% jump in traffic. The Irish airline is already Europe's biggest by passenger numbers and said earlier this month that it agreed to purchase up to 300 jets from Boeing in order to replace older models and support its growth. Ryanair expects its current 20% European market share to grow to 30% by 2034. And finally, the beep goes on. Pagers definitely aren't as popular as they were during their heyday in the 1980s and 90s, but their biggest fans are refusing to let them go. At least 800,000 pagers are still in use, according to the nation's leading paging company, Spoke. And reporter Ariana Perez-Castells says it's not just nostalgia that's keeping the devices holstered to hips.
There's some sophisticated pagers out there today. I was talking to the leading company that makes them, Spoke, and they have like pagers that are like two-way nowadays and do all sorts of things and look a lot more modern than what we maybe imagined pagers were. But the fact of the matter is people still use them. They are in the medical field and people use them for birding as well. There's a lot of like advantages to them. You know, for natural disasters, when cell phone towers are down, you can rely on a pager. If you're looking at a phone that is full of apps and dings and messages from family and friends, that's distracting. If you need to get an emergency crisis kind of page from someone at work if you're in the medical field. So we started to kind of better understand why people liked them. They liked the personal and the professional being separate.
And that's What's News for Monday morning. We'll be back tonight with a new show. I'm Luke Vargas with the Wall Street Journal. Thanks for listening.
This message comes from Viking, committed to exploring the world in comfort. Journey through the heart of Europe on an elegant Viking longship with thoughtful service, destination-focused dining, and cultural enrichment on board and on shore. And every Viking voyage is all-inclusive with no children and no casinos. Discover more at Viking.com.